So how are you getting along with your roommate? I'm sure there are days when things go very well, but are there days when your patience wears thin? Does your roommate drive you bonkers sometimes? Do you ever wonder if you and your roommate are incompatible? Well, consider it a training ground for the future. Right now, you're learning to tolerate the foibles and idiosyncrasies of others, knowing full well that you have a bunch of weird baggage of your own. It sometimes makes you difficult to deal with, too. And this goes for those of you living in town, too. Your life at home has its own set of circumstances that challenge you to pull your weight, cooperate with others. And all of this helps us to prepare for the day, you know, when God gives you co-workers in the workplace, or even more importantly, a spouse to share your life with. Paul tells us in Romans, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So, I hope you all get plenty of opportunities to practice clear communication, conflict resolution, and Christian charity toward others so that you can learn to be compatible with those around you. Today's message is about two that could never be roommates. God calls them incompatible. Who are they? It's more of a what, actually. They are love and fear. We learn that God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in him. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. God is love, the Apostle John writes. What a pure and concise description of God. And more than that, love is a name for God. God is love. Martin Luther once wrote, "If we should desire to paint a picture to represent God, it would have to be a picture of pure love, to bring out the fact that the divine nature is, as it were, a furnace, aglow with love that fills heaven and earth." Luther wrote this when he was old, after he had learned a thing or two about God's love. But in the early days, back in the monastery, the young monk Martin Luther did not feel the love of God in his heart. He only feared God as an angry judge. You see, the church back in his day taught a pretty messed up version of the redemption of Christ. Yes, they said, Jesus Christ died for you, but only for your original sin. He only died for the sinfulness that you were born with. You still had to pay for your personal sins, the ones you commit every day. To do that, you had to confess for each sin orally to a priest. You had, recite each sin in turn so that you could perform an act of penance to make up for it. And then, finally, you could be forgiven and absolved by the priest. As if this error wasn't bad enough, it got worse. This confession and absolution only took care of the eternal punishment that sin deserves. You still had to suffer the temporal punishment that you had coming to you. And that suffering would take place in purgatory, one of the worst lies ever to be forced upon Christian people. They certainly didn't get this idea from the Bible. And all of this really bothered the young monk Martin Luther. His conscience nagged at him constantly. He tried to do a lot of those, the penance to make up for his sins. He shares some of the fear that he once had, that he was going through, in one of the hymns. We'll sing a different stanza of this later, but look how deep his fear is here. "Fast bound in Satan's chains I lay, death brooded darkly o'er me. Sin was my torment night and day, in sin my mother bore me. Yea, deeper still I fell, life had become a living hell, so firmly sin possessed me." Martin Luther was at the end of his spiritual rope. But the church in his day did have a get-out-of-jail-free card in the form of indulgences. If you could part with 1 week's wages, you could tap into the church's massive supply of grace and avoid spending years in purgatory and crowds of desperate people, some of them poverty-stricken, who really needed to feed their children instead, bought these indulgences out of fear. Martin Luther spoke out against this practice of fleecing the poor for the good of the church treasury. Here is thesis number 46. Christians should be taught that unless they have more than they need, they are bound to retain what is necessary for the upkeep of their home and should in no way squander it on indulgences. But the church really needed the money. There were a couple of popes in a row, Julius II and Leo X, that were really big spenders at St. Peter's Basilica. Lots of marble and artwork. Even the ceiling in the Sistine Chapel, which is connected to the basilica, was painted. And a pretty good artist by the name of Michelangelo needed to get paid, so more indulgences were sold. But Luther was adamant in thesis number 50. Christians should be taught that if the Pope knew the exactions of his indulgence preachers, he would rather the Church of St. Peter were reduced to ashes than be built with the skin, flesh, and bones of his sheep. And while the church was still building up its treasury through the sale of these indulgences, Luther put everything in perspective in the alliterative thesis number 62. The true treasure of the church is the holy gospel of the glory and grace of God. Martin Luther was a man who wasn't afraid to tell it like it is. He called it as he saw it, at a time when the church really needed to hear how it is. He saw that the church was capitalizing on the fear of the people, and they were using it for frivolous purposes. Martin Luther was led to the Bible, and he learned that love and fear could not inhabit the heart of a Christian at the same time. Now, let's take a quick little detour here, just in case you're wondering about this whole love and fear thing in the context of the Ten Commandments. Because it's true that Luther wrote in the explanations to the commandments that we should fear and love God, that we, etc., etc. And you're right. It looks like we are to have fear and love in our hearts at the same time. But the word fear here is the good fear, if you will. We all should have a healthy respect or a fear of a God that can judge us and send us to eternal hellfire, while at the same time have a love for the only God that can save us from our sins. The fear that the Apostle John speaks of in today's lesson, in our message here, is that other fear, that fear of hell, caused by a lack of trust in God. So if you have love, then you're not going to have that fear in your heart. Once we have that assurance of salvation, then all that's left is peace with God. There's no fear of judgment. It's an attitude that can't wait until we get to go to our heavenly home. It's a confident anticipation, knowing that Jesus will take us away from the burdens of this world and welcome us to the splendor of the next world. It's a love that drives out all fear. We'll sing of it in the one stanza on the screen. Thank you.